The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
FlyPod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Today we have a New York Times bestselling author of her first book, Lilac Girls, Martha Hall Kelly. She has a brand new book, book number two in the series of three, so they say, and this book is Lost Roses. Martha, welcome.
So nice to be here.
This book, of course, the second book of Lilac Girls, and we meet in that first book Caroline Faraday, and that's a real life person, I guess, going back from World War II.
Absolutely.
How did you meet her?
Well, I never met her. Unfortunately, she passed away in 1990, and I discovered this story in 2000, but I just went up to her house. I lived in Connecticut at the time, in Fairfield, Connecticut, down on the coast, and I had read a magazine article in Victoria magazine about Caroline Faraday's house, which is now a museum. It's called the Bellamy Faraday House and Garden. I really wanted to go up and see that house because of their lilacs. Caroline, who was a New York socialite, she and her mother collected lilacs from around the world. And I love lilacs. So I wanted to go up and see that house. And it did not disappoint, the garden or the tour that day. And that's how I discovered the true story behind Lilac Girls.
Well, Eliza, that's Caroline's mother, and that is pretty much the star of Lost Roses, if you will.
Yes. So in Lilac Girls, Caroline Faraday, she was such an incredible philanthropist, and she was a Broadway actress, and she also was well known for bringing a group of 52 concentration camp survivors, Polish Catholic women who survived Ravensbrück after terrible experiments on their legs, and they were called the rabbits because the Nazis nicknamed them that, because those that survived the experiments on their legs, they hopped about the camp. So she was very famous for bringing those women to the U.S. and getting them reparations because Germany did not want to pay Polish women because it was part of the USSR. So that story is Lilac Girls. And to write a prequel, I went to Random House and said, what if I went back in time and wrote about Caroline's mom, Eliza? Because I got so much mail about Eliza. People really liked her. She's got a lot of spirit in Lilac Girls. And I thought, I'd love to go back and first of all, explore World War I this time versus World War II, and also find out where Caroline's strong love of philanthropy came from. And I found that Eliza had a story of her own. She brought women that had survived the Bolshevik Revolution, white Russian women who were former aristocrats that lost everything after the Tsar lost power. It's clear where Caroline got it from because her mom did the exact same thing that Caroline did with the rabbits. She brought them out to her home in Southampton. It wasn't known as the Hamptons at the time, but out in the Hamptons, they had a beautiful cottage out there called the Mitchell Cottage. It definitely not a cottage. It slept 20 people or something. She brought these women out there, and it was not a popular thing at the time because people didn't want anyone that wasn't American out there. And so that is in large part what the story is based on.
You know, during the time of World War II, I'm sure there were a lot of people that came to America. And, well, I know there is from history. How did the American people treat people that came maybe from Austria or Poland or Germany itself?
Well, by that time, there were so many Germans here. So it was tough before the Americans got into World War II. There was a lot of German propaganda in terms of the war. They wanted us to be on the side of the Germans. The same thing happened with World War I. But it ended up, once the war started, the Germans were worried for their lives. There was actually a man, I can't remember if it's World War I or II, but there was a German man lynched in near Chicago. So it shows you how terrified the Germans must have been.
So book number two, Lost Roses. This is going to be a three-book series, as far as you know. Now, could that change?
You mean, could I add one? Anything's possible. I'm working on the third one now, which is Civil War, and it's Caroline's great-grandmother, Jane Eliza, who had an incredible family story. She had seven young girls, and her husband died tragically at sea. She had another baby on the way, and that child was born after the father passed away, and it was a boy. So she raised seven girls and one young boy by herself without her husband. She moved from Boston to New York. She was a staunch abolitionist because she had seen a slave auction when she was younger, and some of the girls had as well. So she raised them to be staunch abolitionists, and that is what the third book is about. I described it to my publisher as 12 Years a Slave meets Little Women, and it's turning out to be just that. It's a very emotional story.
You know, it's kind of refreshing because a lot of authors won't talk about what's next after this book because they might be jinxed or something. Didn't seem to bother you.
Not at all. Well, they're all based on true stories, and I've done so much research on them. I love talking about it. And I think it's fun for the readers, too, because they know there's another one coming. And Lost Roses just came out 2 weeks ago, and I'm going to 30 different cities talking about it, and they're all saying, okay, we're ready for the Civil War book. So they're insatiable. But I'm writing as fast as I can.
With Lilac Girls, your very first book, very first published book, were you surprised at how that became a bestseller?
Oh, I was. I still am in shock because of it. It was 3 years ago. You know, I don't have a writing background, except I wrote advertising, 30-second commercials and things. And I had a journalism background in college, but I never took any kind of writing class for fiction. I never even thought about writing fiction until I went up to the house, to the Bellamy Faraday house, and discovered Caroline's story. And that's how I got into it. When I actually got an agent and got a publisher, that was shocking because I just thought, oh, well, self-published. I would have happily self-published. I thought, this is my passion project. I don't think anyone else will care about it. And then I was really surprised when it hit the New York Times list the first week it was out. Yeah, I'm still a little bit in shock. Same thing happened to Lost Roses, except it hit at number three this time. Yes. Last time it was number 14.
So. And a lot of people would die for that, even 14.
I still am so grateful and so happy, but it was a total shock.
Coming from the advertising background, you're in good company. James Patterson, he was in advertising, and you see how he has gone. So you never know.
If I can have a centimeter of his success, I think that would be great. But I do think that advertising is really helpful in a few ways. I think you're trained to think of the person that you're writing for. It's not just this independent effort that's all about me. It's I really think about my reader. And also, you learn to be succinct. And I think readers appreciate that. At least mine do.
You know, and I've asked other people also, how do you write? They'll give different answers. But with this, you're looking at the reader themselves and how they will perceive the book.
Oh, absolutely. I think about the reader while I'm writing the whole time. I just don't want to be boring. That's what I thought with my first book. I just want there to be enough conflict and just enough description to make you feel like you're really there. I think that's from my journalism background, maybe. I love thinking about the reader and what they might like. And I also write the story that I want to read, but that is so that my readers will love it.
You're going to love this because Lost Roses pretty much starts out, it's a party lifestyle of the rich and famous, czars and famous people. How do you bring that to life so well?
Well, with Lilac Girls, I did a lot of research, a lot of travel. I went to Poland and Germany, went to Ravensbrück concentration camp, went to Poland to see where the girls were arrested and where they grew up. I figured I had to do the same thing for this book. And since it takes place in Russia, a large part of it, and Paris, I had to go to Russia. So my husband and I went there, and we did the exact same thing that I did for Lilac Girls, a lot of research. We saw many, many palaces, and also the rural countryside, because one of the characters is a peasant girl. And then once I showed it to my publisher, they said, we love it, but you need to put more Paris in there, because they all the characters meet up in Paris at the end, all three. And those are the words that every writer, I think, likes to hear. You need more Paris. You got to go back. So that was really great. And I discovered all sorts of wonderful things about the Russian emigres that landed in Paris from St. Petersburg and eventually came to the U.S. and how they had an enclave in Paris that's still there today.
With Lost Roses, what was the most surprising thing that you found out in your research?
Oh, goodness. I think it was probably about the Tsar's family. I assumed that they were very spoiled. You know, the Grand Duchesses, I'd always been fascinated with them. And it turns out their mother brought them up in a very strict way. They had to sleep on army cots, which I thought was really interesting. I pictured them in some sort of canopy bed or something. They had a very strict upbringing, which I thought was really interesting. I thought everything about the Romanovs was really interesting in researching it, and how the Tsar really was not the ideal person to be Tsar. He didn't want the job, really. He only felt like he was there because God wanted him to be there. He really wanted to be home with his family. He wanted to play tennis and dominoes and cards and read. So it's such a tragic story.
And then, of course, there are rumors of war, like pretty much there always are, I guess. Lost Roses, the brand new book by Martha Hall Kelly, of course, the New York Times bestselling author of Lilac Girls. Now, you know, in this book, I find there are some pretty amusing sentences in here. You try to make this a little bit where people smile.
I always do. I'm curious what you thought was funny.
The gardener named Gardner.
Oh.
Was one.
Mr. Gardner's in Lilac Girl, so.
Yes, okay. And then the lady who her name met feet out first, I believe it was.
Oh, wow, you're a close reader.
And with that, it was, and then you mentioned something about she was always on the run. And I thought that was pretty funny also.
You get my sense of humor.
Yeah.
So that's, I love that. Yeah, again, I write what I want to read, so. It's a pretty difficult subject, so I think sometimes bits of levity help get you through it. But I didn't want to shy away from, and the same thing was true with Lilac Girls, it's about a concentration camp. I didn't want to shy away from the reality of it. I always feel like if you can get through that as a reader, the hard part, the difficult, sad parts, it only makes the ending that much more satisfying because you have gone through it with the character. And I know a lot of people said that about Kasia in the first book. She's one of the women that it's operated on and comes through it. And the same is true for Sophia in this. It's, she goes down to the very bottom and then comes back up again. So, and that's what I'm writing in the Civil War book too. So I love that journey.
Lost Roses. Now, in this book, you describe a lot, not only the parties, but the dresses, the jewelry, and other things. How do you bring that to life so well? I mean, it's almost like watching the pages, flicking through the pages and seeing it right there, like an old-time movie.
I love that. Well, I really try to be cinematic because, again, that's what I like to read. I love having the book kind of come alive. Maybe it is from my journalism background, but I feel like I do enough research that I feel like I can walk around in that world and really see it. And then that way, I feel like my characters can bring that to life from what they're seeing. And I love adding what they're wearing and what their jewelry looks like because that's so much a part of the class society. Back then, and I actually, when I was in Russia, a Russian said to me, people decide about you, make up their mind about you based on what you look like. After that, they listen to you and then they make up their mind based on what you say. And I just thought that was really interesting, even today in Russia. So especially back then, just the wrong hat could do you in or the wrong gloves. And so I think it's important to include that.
One person lost a diamond as big as almost a goose egg or a duck egg, is what you said. And the green emeralds, I mean, they just shine when you write in your book. When you write that, who doesn't know what a green emerald looks like, I guess, in their mind's eye?
I love jewelry, so it's fun to write about it. But that was a true story. At some ball, he had worn, and this was a cousin to the Tsar, he had worn some sort of diamond, a big diamond, and he lost it. He was, I don't know, dancing or something. And yeah, it's pretty amazing the wealth that we're talking about.
Lost Roses, this takes place in America, in Paris, in Russia. How did you make that twist and turn to come out as a book? I mean, because there are different ways you can go with everything.
I love doing that. I had read The Help a long time ago, and I loved it. And I just loved what Catherine Stockett did. And I wanted to do the same kind of a thing with three women. And it worked really well in Lilac Girls, I thought. And it's kind of like a braid, writing it. And people ask me, do you write each narrator separately? And the answer is no. I love to write them all together, because then you can see how certain characters are looking at other characters. It's much better, I think, to do it that way. And that's, I thought, if people liked Lilac Girls, they'll like it for this too. And I love writing that way. I think my third book will be the last one I write that way, though, because I'm moving on to other things.
A historical novel. You've got everything from World War II, that era, World War I, whatever you're writing about, and you have to get the things correct on there. You're going to hear from your listeners. How do you put those words in the mouths of these characters?
You know, that's my favorite part. It's so much fun writing dialogue. And I think if you do enough research, you just feel like you're in their world. But you're right. You hear from readers if you have any kind of little tiny thing, especially because Random House helps you go through that as well. I wrote in Lilac Girls, I said something about a stink bug, and then an entomologist contacted me and said, well, that chapter you were writing was in 1958, and the stink bug did not come to the United States until 1952. And so I just thought that was so funny.
And you inform him that this stink bug did?
Well, I'm not sure if it was a man. I don't remember if it was a man or a woman, but I should have said that, an early stink bug. So now I'm super careful about every tiny little thing, because yeah, people, they reach out.
You know, one thought I had today when I was looking over the book, how cool would it be for an author to put a mistake in there and advertise it, that there's a mistake in this
book,
go out
and
buy it.
Yeah. You're helping me become James Patterson. Thank you very much. That's a great idea. Something similar, not exactly like that, but I have kind of sprinkled breadcrumbs through the books. Things that you see in Lilac Girls, you will see in Lost Roses, and then in the third book as well, which I think is going to be a sunflower. And I love that, because you see the Woolsey silver in Lilac Girls, and then you see it again when the Woolseys are using it. So I love that readers, if they read carefully, can see certain things through the years. There's also a table that they used to attach a lint press to in the Civil War, and I put that table in Lilac Girls, knowing that I was going to write the Civil War book. So I've planted some kind of clues in there, which is kind of fun for readers.
I wonder, as they're reading that, and if they've read Lilac Girls, if that takes that story closer to them in Lost Roses.
Oh, they definitely say that. Absolutely. Yeah, I think that they're becoming really attached to the family. And I know that for sure, because I live 10 minutes away from the museum now. When I moved back from Atlanta, I pitched my husband on moving to Litchfield, which is very close to the house, because I discovered that area when I went up so much to research at the house. And we have events up there. When I first went up there, I was the only person on the tour, and now they're averaging 80 people a day. I know. And it's a very sleepy little place and lovely. And I think they're excited, but it's just a little overwhelming when tour buses pull up with book groups and things. So, and the reason they're coming is because they're coming to pay tribute to Caroline and her family. And the house is full of memorabilia and pictures of all of the family. And I think they're falling in love with the family, which I'm happy, because that's how I get into the whole thing.
So what's a day in the life like of Martha Hall Kelly?
Oh, goodness. It's very boring, except when I'm out on tour, which is very exciting. Oh, goodness. Well, I have a dog, a mini golden doodle named Oliver, that I miss horribly. I've been away now for a while, and I know know that he sits waiting for me, my husband told me, which is so sad. I let him out and then get to work early. I am a morning person and all my best stuff happens in the morning. So 7 a.m. or close to that, I try to get writing. I just take a break here and there. And then if my husband's home, I'll smell garlic and go down around 7 for dinner. And if he's not, I just have to whip something up myself. And that is my life. Doesn't that sound so boring?
Is it a quick write? Do you write this stuff quick? Or do you like, oh my gosh, you know, I got two pages done today and that's great?
You know, I try not to hold myself to a word count. I never have, because I just feel like that squishes any kind of creativity. I do what I feel like doing, and I love doing that. Some days I don't write at all. I just research, if that's what I feel like. But if I'm feeling fresh and good and excited about some scenes, then I just write all day. When you ask, is it quick? That's a really interesting question. The words come quickly, but then I transpose it all into a Word document, and that's kind of an editing session, and that's fun. And then you can really feel the book coming alive. And so I don't think it's quick. And there's a lot of research in there, too. I was writing some scenes in the hotel in Cleveland. I had to do a lot of research there, but thank goodness the internet is at your fingertips. I think I had to find out what kind of a carriage they'd be driving in. So that slows you down. I think writing a contemporary novel would be really fun someday because I wouldn't have to keep looking things up.
What are the challenges between, of course, writing for advertising for years? Okay, and you've got that down. What were the challenges of moving to a novel?
You know, I didn't even connect them at all. I look back on my advertising career, and I always wanted to write continuing commercials for salad dressing. I remember it and having the client say, you know, it doesn't work that way. And now they're actually doing them. But back then, I should have taken that as a hint or a sign that I should have been writing some sort of fiction. But when I started writing, I didn't even think in terms of advertising because I didn't think that was really, you know, writing a commercial and writing a novel are so different that I feel like I have the best teachers in the world because I read every fabulous book about how to write a novel. I counted, I have 64. I know. I love them. And I feel like people like Saul Stein I love and Noah Lukman, I just feel like I've learned from the best. And right away, I just took their advice. And it was always about writing scenes, make it all about conflict, and make it very visual on the page. So once I had their advice, I was good to go.
Lost Rose is your brand new book. It's the second book of first book, which makes sense, Lilac Girls. If I wanted to find out more about Lost Roses, Lilac Girls, Martha Hall Kelly, where do I go?
I have a website. It is MarthaHallKelly.com, and it is a treasure trove of wonderful information about the true stories behind these women. And it also has my event schedule, if you want to come out and see me on my tour, all sorts of fun stuff. I had a playlist for Lilac Girls of what I listened to in terms of music, and I did another one for Lost Roses. There's also a whole part for book groups, which is really fun. It has recipes and questions that you can talk about, discussion questions. I also have a really great Pinterest account, if you like Pinterest. And as I'm writing, I pin clues about what I'm writing about. So that's fun, too.
Well, it sounds like a good time. Lost Roses, the brand new book by Martha Hall Kelly. She'll take you back to World War II. Yes, it's a generation back from Lilac Girls, where we were introduced to Carolyn Faraday. We'll meet her mom, Eliza, and three other great ladies in Lost Roses. Martha, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for having me.
Been listening to Cover to Cover. I've been your host, Mark DeWitt.
To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.